This is CKLB, the voice of Den and Day. I'm Stacey Arden-Smith, and you're listening to Take the Road Less Traveled, but always wear good moccasins. We had the absolute honor of chatting with Victoria Pruden, the president of the Métis National Council, and discussing her journey within advocacy.
How did you get here? How has the journey been so far?
What a great question that is, and it's something that I reflect about a lot. I grew up north of Edmonton in the community of St. Albert. I was born in Edmonton and grew up in this beautiful community in St. Albert, and I didn't really realize it growing up, but there's a lot of rich Métis culture in St. Albert, and we kept our horses at what's now a Métis Heritage Site, the Belcourt Place, which was just a short walk away from my childhood home. And so in my early life, I was really blessed, you know, with good parents, and I was really grateful for how loving my dad was when I was a little girl, and, you know, quite a happy childhood. And we moved back to Saskatchewan when I was in my early teens. And going to school in Saskatchewan, especially with the levels of racism and things like that, I started to really get a life education about many social justice issues, including racism and sexism and all of those things. And I went to university at Saskatchewan Indian Federated College in the late 80s. And then all of the education about all the social justice issues that I became very passionate about in my career, I think were pretty steeped in my experiences as a Métis woman living in Regina and experiencing, you know, what life is like in some of those prairie cities. And so today, I'm in the first year and a half of a three-year term as the president of the Métis National Council. And I became, as a young woman, very passionate about social justice and looking for ways that I could find my way into basically being an advocate. And it took a few tries. I had lots of different sort of career paths that I explored. And I started off doing a business degree and working for the government for a while and working in finance and banking for a while. And I very quickly realized there was no path to social justice or advocating for human rights or Indigenous rights in that path. But it was all valuable experiences. And when I moved to British Columbia, in the late 1990s, I became really involved in the Métis community there. And then I think I did my first terms as president or vice president of our locals in the early 2000s in Victoria, and really started to dig into enjoying working with grassroots community and learning about Métis governance, you know, at the local level. And I just absolutely loved it. And I was working in my profession at that time. I'd finally found a niche working in a women's serving agency where I worked frontline with women who had experienced violence and abuse, and whether it was domestic violence or childhood experiences of abuse. And that was extremely, extremely fulfilling. So I did that for many years, sort of balance that working for community on the political grassroots side with our people, and then working professionally, supporting and advocating for women and Two-Spirit survivors of violence and abuse. So that was a really pivotal period of my life that I'm so grateful for every day. And, you know, then I had my son and spent years working and balancing politics, being a single mom, and working, serving women as an advocate, as a counselor, as a frontline worker, and then got into management of our charitable organization that I had been working for. So getting lots of experience about juggling and multitasking, as we tend to do as women leaders, where we're parenting and we're volunteering and we're advocating and we're engaged in governance and we're bringing home a paycheck, right? So I began working as a staff member for the Métis Nation British Columbia when my son was quite young. That was also a very good learning experience, learning about public policy, learning about how to negotiate with governments, federal, provincial, you know, and excellent experience. And it gave my son an opportunity to really grow up engaged in governance and community, which I'm really happy about. And I'm really happy he's always had that opportunity to grow up with a very strong identity about who we are, who he is, who, you know, who our families are. And so that's been very fulfilling. But now, having the opportunity to work at a national level, I always keep that grassroots experience at absolutely the center of every conversation, every meeting. And I really feel like the most important part for me is the reason why I want to do what I do is for our most vulnerable people. That's the reason.
All right, all right, all right.
My phone obviously agrees.
I love it. All right. All right. All right. That, you see, there's spirit. There's the ancestors right there. All right. All right. All right. So it's been really quite a fun and amazing journey. And I feel a lot of gratitude. Gratitude for the challenges. Gratitude for, you know, the really tough times, because they all add to our character. And, you know, I think refine our commitment to the traditional values that we really believe in and that we love. And getting to serve your people is absolutely the best gift in the world, I think.
In your journey that you've had, what would you consider the point of having made it within your advocacy role?
We had I had an experience where I was able to contribute to potential amendments to legislation. We were on the brink after some Senate testimony a few weeks back, where a bill that they were debating, we were looking for an amendment to include denialism of the residential school experience as a hate crime. And unfortunately, you know, we'd been really hopeful that the proposed amendment was going to go all the way. It looks like there will be another separate piece of legislation that's drafted, but that's one of the experiences that makes me feel really, really excited. So while that particular piece of legislation, the residential school denialism amendment, didn't go through, but I know that we're getting close. And so those are some experiences that I think, okay, like, this work that I've been doing for so many decades really can and will make a difference. But there's been other many poignant moments in my life where I'll run into a former client in community, and they'll remind me of just how pivotal the work that we did together was, and how my compassion and care and support and advocacy for them was life-changing. Or, you know, I had another example. I had helped a person who was trying to register for their Métis citizenship so that his children would have an opportunity for access to education and things like that. And he was houseless at the time, and so we let him use the address of the office so that he could, you know, get his registration. I mean, it's, you know, you do what you need to do in order for people to get what they need. And I had an opportunity to be at a community gathering years after that, and saw both of his children there, who were being highlighted as successful graduates, one from high school and the other one from post-secondary education, and having attended Camosun College in our community, and thinking all those years ago, having supported their dad to get his registration, having met them as little children, as a cultural support worker, and then seeing these youth being lifted up and held up in our community, you know, achieving some pretty good things, was deeply moving. So, you know, I think when we think about, you know, making it, when we get those pointed examples, whether it's helping someone to change the course of their life, that's having made it. When we've touched somebody or contributed to their, you know, them being able to achieve their goals or their dreams, or, you know, safety, education, whatever it is, and then being able to experience, start to experience on a grand scale, helping to shape or change legislation or policy in our country for the betterment of our people. What a privilege it is to be able to help other human beings and help our people and advocate for them. To me, that's making it. And the day that my son graduated from high school and being at his Indigenous grad is another moment where I just really felt like this is what making it feels like.
When you were a little girl, is this where you thought you would be? What did you want to be?
When I was a little girl, the first thing I remember wanting to be was a tiger. Not possible. But I couldn't really have imagined taking this path and being able to be confident enough and believe enough in myself to occupy positions of leadership. And, you know, as a young woman, I couldn't imagine traveling the places that I had traveled or being able to, you know, be someone that others would believe in enough to be able to lead. And I'm really happy that, you know, through all of the healing that we have to do of our own trauma or intergenerational trauma and that journey towards belief in oneself and being confident and, you know, I couldn't ever have imagined, but I'm extremely, extremely grateful that the circumstances, sort of that magic of, I think, where our ancestors want us to be and where Creator places us, and having that faith, that's something that really is coming back to me in such a strong way lately. And so I can't believe it, but I'm very, very grateful.
It's amazing to know that you, with such a soft-spoken, but yet you have such profound impact. If you had the opportunity to have dinner with three people in history, who would they be?
Wow. And all at the same time?
All at the same time. Or it could be one after the other. Be one really good meal.
Boy, would it ever be a good meal? Okay, this I'm just really just going for sort of off the cuff here. I think it would be really interesting to have Jesus Christ at a meal. That would be really, really profound. I have lots of questions and curiosities about the teachings of Christ from his perspective. That would be quite fascinating.
Okay.
And then I'd love to have my great-great auntie. Her name was Isabel Falcon, and she's revered as one of the absolute fiercest women warriors in the Métis Nation at a time when, of course, warfare and being a warrior was, of course, very male dominated. I'm fascinated by her. And then I think I would probably have my great grandmother, Sarah Jane Delorme. I'd also like her to be at the dinner because I never had an opportunity to learn a lot of the teachings that she had. She was what's called in our language a mesquite. So she was an absolute master of traditional medicines and an herbalist, and she was a midwife, and they say that she presided over 3,000 Métis and First Nations births and a very minimal amount of settler births. And she was born in Batoche in 1885 during the resistance. So I think it would be Auntie Isabel, my tapan, Sarah Jane Delorme, and Jesus. How about that for a dinner?
That's pretty good. I guess my question would be water or wine?
We'd only need water, really.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to chat with you. It has been a pleasure.
It's been a real pleasure to chat with you, Stacey. Thank you so much for the conversation.
Masicho.